each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and I am sitting in again today for Father Anthony on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I am so excited about this afternoon's conversation because we have with us a guest I have been trying to get for months, and finally he has been available and is with me here in the studio, and that's Pastor Cesar LaFleur, who is the executive pastor at the Spirit of Liberty Church in Markham, Illinois. Pastor LaFleur is well known in the community for being not only a leader of worship and ministry, but also was someone who speaks out very publicly and frequently on multitude of issues that affect the Black community, but especially issues that involve marriage and the family. And he is also quite an expert on the issue of violence in our community. And Pastor LaFleur and I were talking as I came in today to meet him about just the number of murders over the weekend in Chicago. Just this weekend, we had 5 murders, Pastor.
Tragic.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So we were going to spend the first half of our conversation with you all today in one particular way, but we're going to talk a little bit about the violence instead. But Pastor, before we do that, for those of our listeners who might not be familiar with you and your good work, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to where you are today?
Okay, well, first of all, let me just say thank you so much for being persistent in inviting me to come. And I'm so very happy that I was able to actually make myself available for today. Yeah, once again, my name is Pastor Cesar LaFleur. I am the executive pastor at the Spirit of Liberty Church of God in Markham, Illinois. Previously, I was the associate pastor at the New Community Church in Dalton, which was a multi-site, multi-ethnic church, where I served on staff there for 14 years.
Wow.
Some of the other points of ministry that I'm associated with is I am the Midwest Regional Director of LEARN, which is the Life Education and Resource Network. It is probably the largest network of pro-life, pro-family African-American organizations across the nation. It's led by Dr. Johnny Hunter out of Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Right.
I'm also a senior fellow at the Freedom's Journal Institute for the Study of Faith and Public Policy, under the leadership of Dr. Eric Wallace, who many people might be familiar with him. He was actually a former candidate for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District and a candidate for the U.S. Senate.
Okay.
And so actually I'm going to be with Dr. Wallace at the end of this week in Washington, D.C. As I was mentioning to you, we're going to be undergoing a very important conference there entitled Black Families Matter. So I've been working in the pro-life, pro-family ministry for the last 25 years.
But you weren't always.
I wasn't always.
Right,
absolutely.
Exactly. A little bit of a conversion experience,
I
didn't
you? I did have
my own conversion. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I'm excited to do
that. Not to put that you on the spot too much.
No, absolutely. I'm excited to share that because it is very important. As you mentioned, I was just like everybody else. I was going along. I was actually in the church. But I don't think I had come into a full awareness of my spiritual consciousness as how my faith is supposed to be lived out in everything else that I do, including my politics. Mm-hmm. And so I tell people all the time, I was just a regular run-of-the-mill Democrat just going along. I had all the same complaints everybody else had. And so I was just going along just really in a daze, just going along to get along. But I was working for a pastor by the name of Apostle Richard D. Hinton of the Monument of Faith Church. On the south side of Chicago. And I didn't know him, Mary, as being pro-life or anybody who was really conservative on the issues. I just knew him as a very prolific preacher and a really good man.
Mm-hmm.
He preached a message one time entitled Twin Signs of the Times. He was preaching out of 17th chapter of Luke when it says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be when the Son of Man comes. And he talked about the times in the days of Noah. And he focused in on the violence of that day and age, and he associated with the violence that we're living in this age. And in order to illustrate that, Pastor Hinton went into this very powerful preaching about the evils of abortion. And up until that point, I was not even really conscious of it. You know, I had no conviction, no understanding, nothing about abortion excited me or angered me or anything. But as the Spirit was using him to preach, he preached so powerfully about the evils of abortion. He was very specific in about the instruments of abortion, how it was carried out. And he preached about how it was a sin because it was the shedding of innocent human blood.
Right.
I remember he actually quoted a poem that just blazed itself in my heart. It was called The Abortion Tree. You don't mind if I share a little bit of it?
No, please, no.
It said, I hang on the abortion tree, dead, yes, dead, as I could be. Which of you was my mother, and why did you do this to me? I did no harm to anyone. I had no chance to laugh or cry. Yet you, my mother, condemned me and hired a killer for me to die. You had me murdered before I was born, before I could learn to pray. Before I could utter the words, Daddy, you killed me and threw me away. You threw me away like a piece of garbage. Your heart must have been callous and cold. But did you forget, mother dear, that I have an immortal soul? No one can predict what the future holds, and who knows what your suffering might be. But I won't be around to help you, Mom, because you hanged me on the abortion tree. Now, I know that's very graphic, and it could be upsetting to some individuals, especially someone who has gone through that.
Right.
But it did something to me. It woke up a sensitivity in me about the evil of abortion, and it made me fully aware that what we were talking about was the intentional killing of living children in the womb.
Right.
So after that awakening, you know, I was troubled. You know, I was confused. I didn't know what I was supposed to do with this.
Yeah.
And so I was actually sitting in another meeting with some pastors. We were getting ready for the Midwest Men's Conference, a conference that we said was the mission was to disciple and develop the African-American male. And a gentleman walked in unannounced, you know, with no appointment, and asked if he could come in and speak to us about a very important issue. The pastor that was facilitating the meeting allowed for him to speak.
Yeah.
His name was Johnny R.C. Tyler.
Okay.
And he represented the African American Family Association. And he started talking to us about abortion and its effect in the black community. Here's an interesting thing. Out of all the pastors that were sitting around the table that day, I seemed to be the only one that really tuned into what he was saying and wanted to hear more. They only gave him a few moments.
Okay.
But he asked if he could leave his card, and I took one of the cards. And I was so anxious to call him because I knew there was something God wanted to do with this.
Right.
So I called him and happened to find out that he was working with another very beloved pastor, Pastor Hiram Crawford Sr. I'm sure you know the name.
Oh, everyone, if you're a person in the pro-life movement in Chicago and you've not met Hiram Crawford or his son, Hiram Crawford Jr., then you haven't been around long enough.
Absolutely.
Because, they're beloved members.
Absolutely. And Crawford was a very close friend. And so, long story short, I contacted John Tyler, and I asked him, okay, so obviously something has changed to me. What am I to do with this? He says, educate yourself and then educate others about the evils of abortion. And during that time, this was back in the early 90s, there were not a whole lot of black people in the pro-life movement.
Yeah. I mean, Pastor Crawford and his wife and then their children, I mean, really were, if you went to pro-life events, sometimes they would be the only African-Americans there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so Pastor Crawford kind of took Tyler and myself under his wings as his disciples, if you will.
Wonderful.
And he poured into us. And then he gave us the platform to pour into others.
Wonderful.
And so that was my conversion, and that changed my life. It changed my politics. It changed my perspective. It changed my priorities. I knew that it was something that I needed to do, that God was calling me specifically to this vein of ministry.
Right.
And I have been in it ever since.
And it's, you know, for me, it was always so puzzling because of the disproportionately higher numbers of abortion in the black community
Absolutely.
As opposed to other communities. And in fact, in New York City, I believe statistics still accurate, at least it was last year, more black babies are aborted than are born live every year.
Absolutely. That was absolutely
and,
a fact.
And Chicago is kind of, we're coming second or third, I think. But,
absolutely.
And when you look at the location of many of the abortion clinics.
In minority communities.
They're
absolutely.
All in black and Hispanic communities or near college campuses.
Absolutely.
They're up near,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's one up near Loyola. There's one right near DePaul. So they're kind of strategically placed, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And why so few people have kind of connected the dots between racism and the real preying on the black community by the abortion industry and then with violence. It's always puzzled me that we don't see more people speaking out about the real logical connections that are there
Absolutely.
Between those issues.
You
yeah.
know, one of our LEARN affiliates, Pastor Clinard Childress up in New Jersey, his website is entitled blackgenocide.org.
Hmm.
And so he speaks, along with others, Mark Crutcher with the MAFA 21 Project
right.
and others, that the high abortion rate in the black community is not by chance. That mm-hmm. was the intention of it.
Right.
Mark Crutcher in MAFA talks about the dilemma that after slavery was outlawed, well, now what do we do with all of these Africans who we no longer have use for?
Yeah.
We can't send them all back. And so what do we do? And so you're aware of the fact that it was during that time period when this eugenics philosophy started emerging in the earth. And so abortion in the black community was a deliberate outgrowth of that desire, that need, in order to be able to control black population.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only to stop black births and black growth, but also to eliminate parts of population.
Right.
Now, people get very offended when you talk about that. But there's a reason why African Americans, who make up only 12% of the population, African-American women are only 6% of the population, yet we have 34% to 38%
right.
of all
the abortions.
Abortions.
Right.
Because they're targeted and they're aimed at us.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, you know, was a eugenist
mm-hmm.
who actually thought that black population was like human weeds.
Right.
What do we do to get rid of them? One of the most disappointing things, Mary, was as I started down this road of being a pro-life advocate, the first people that I went to was the black pastors
right.
and the black church.
Mm-hmm.
And it broke my heart when they didn't receive this information with the same enthusiasm that I was trying to share it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like there was denial
yeah.
that they really didn't want to see, which was very obvious, is that, listen, this is intentional. It's directed towards us.
Mm-hmm.
The desire is to eliminate and destroy our population.
Mm-hmm.
And it's setting some terrible norms within our community.
Right.
As we talked about violence.
Right.
You know, how can we expect that we won't live in a culture of violence when we're not even safe in the most sacred place we're supposed to feel safe in, the womb of our mother?
Right.
And so if we can slaughter children in the womb, then what keeps us from feeling entitled to slaughter them in the streets?
Right, and that's something Mother Teresa of Calcutta was very, you know, famous mm-hmm. for saying as well. And she would really, you know, chastise the people in the United States to say, you have your abortion rate. If you want to solve the problem of peace in this world, it has to start with the smallest among us. It has to start with the abortion issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went back and checked the numbers. So 6 men were killed and 37 others shot. Across Chicago between Friday of this weekend and Monday morning this morning. So I thought, yeah. So
yeah.
another person has died since
mm-hmm.
We started talking. And the violence numbers they're simply atrocious. And I'm always very grateful to see the number of new initiatives that, you know, seem to be brought to the public's attention. Different ways to try to curb the violence, to stem the violence, and especially now as we're going into summer, Pastor, we know that when the temperatures rise, the murder rates rise.
Yes.
And so when we get back from our break, we'll discuss some of the strategies that you think would work a little better than the ones we've been trying now, and we'll continue our conversation about what you're doing in the black community and some things that we think could be a help to bring that back, that community back to the way that it was. Not so many decades ago. This is Mary Fiorito. I am sitting in for Father Anthony today on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
You've looked for the right school for your child, but what school? You've worked hard to instill right reason and the values that God has established. And yet, you might be concerned not only with your child's school's quality of education, but by what they may be teaching, maybe undermining what you have worked so hard to instill. Perhaps St. Stanislaus Kostka School could be the positive answer to your questions. Academic excellence and Christ-centered values are the hallmarks of St. Stanislaus Kostka School. To find out what may be the best opportunity for your child, visit ststandschicago.org. That's ststandschicago.org. See the videos, see the students, and see what may be the best decision you can make for your child. Contact the school online or pick up the phone and call St. Stanislaus Kostka School to arrange for a visit at 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560.
Newsflash! This just in, Winds of Change podcast can now be heard on your iPhone and Android phone. Download the TuneIn Radio app and search Winds of Change, and Winds of Change will be right there for your very ears. We now return you to Winds of Change.
And this is Mary Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. And I am so pleased to be joined today for our show by Pastor Cesar LaFleur, who is the executive pastor of the Spirit of Liberty Church in Markham, Illinois. And Pastor LaFleur is a nationally known expert on the African-American community and abortion. So we have been discussing his sort of conversion to becoming a very active member of the pro-life movement. And, you know, Pastor LaFleur, I had the great privilege of meeting, boy, when I was a real newbie in the pro-life movement, so a good 25 years ago, Dr. Mildred Jefferson.
Oh, absolutely.
Who
yeah.
was the first African-American woman to graduate from Harvard's medical school. And Dr. Jefferson really, I think, saw before for many in the Black community, the connections between mm-hmm. abortion and, you know, eugenics and this really being a bad thing for the Black community. So she became very involved in National Right to Life and was well known as a speaker. And I remember we had her here in Chicago for an event. That's where I met her about 25 years ago. And I'm standing in the back of the room because I was in charge of helping to corral the other media that day. And I was speaking to the Tribune reporter and he said, "Well, who is that woman?" I said, "Oh, it's, you know, Dr. Jefferson. She was the first woman to graduate, the first African-American woman to graduate from Harvard's medical school." And he wouldn't believe me.
Wow.
He
mm-hmm.
would not believe me. He said, "Well, you know, you're saying it is doesn't mean that it's true." I'm like, "Well, go look her up."
Yeah.
I mean, everybody. But he simply could not comprehend that the woman who really just, you know, broke this barrier for Black women at Harvard's medical school could possibly be a pro-life activist.
Absolutely.
Do you find that kind of prejudice when you're, you know, out speaking? I think it's a little less than it used to be, but still.
Yeah, it's significantly less than what it used to be. But, you know, the thing about Dr. Jefferson and everything that she contributed, you know, not only to history, like becoming that first woman to graduate from that medical school, also her work with the National Right to Life, mm-hmm. one of the past presidents yep. of that, and a very prolific speaker, but someone whose story was amazing that I was just really sad that people didn't reverence her and appreciate her for who she was and
yeah.
what she accomplished.
Yeah.
You know, she was also, she was the result of a rape. And so
oh, no, I did not know that.
Could have made a different
oh,
decision.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, but God intervened. So, absolutely. And there is a certain dismissal, certain prejudice. But here's the interesting thing. I was pointing out to someone the other day, one of the things that, and I hope you don't mind me talking about liberals and conservatives.
No, go ahead. Right ahead.
But
this is a free speech zone. you may say whatever you'd like.
I pointed out that one of the things that liberals, especially liberal Democrats, hate are independent thinking African Americans. And because they despise and hate us so much, because we cannot just be roped along and led along to follow the prevailing opinion, in order to be able to undermine us or discredit us, they work very hard to try to convince other African Americans to hate us just as much as they do.
Okay.
And so they do it in terms of politics and you know, we've been called sellouts or Uncle Toms or people who are not advancing, you know, the black, what's the best interest of black people.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, many times, especially when you talk about issues like abortion and the sanctity of marriage, I will experience as much racial animus from people of my own race than I will from even white people. Now, let me explain that.
Yeah, please.
Very seldom is a white person going to come up and call me a N-word or say something openly racist to me.
Okay.
And so this is very seldom going to happen, especially in the day and age we live in.
Right.
But there are a lot of African Americans who resent the positions that we take because it seems to be disloyal to what, you know, the black thought should be.
Right.
They feel very empowered to be able to call us names, Uncle Tom, sellout, and all of those things because we happen to think differently on these issues. And we speak up and we speak out and we try to educate others, which is offensive and it's a threat to those individuals who are fully invested in the, you know, the status quo going along.
So is this because the Democratic Party has as part of it, an official part, a plank in its platform, is support for abortion with no limits?
Absolutely.
And so because of that, because this is tied to the Democratic Party, then therefore African-Americans who are pro-life are simply seen as,
absolutely.
You know, okay.
Because the Democrat Party is the party of abortion.
Right.
And so that's fully tied in as part of their platform.
Right.
And African-Americans are fully committed to the Democrat Party. And this is something that was a change back in the 60s, you
right.
know, because, you know, before then, we were Republican.
Right.
But, you know, because of the social issues and the social welfare and different things, that New Deal that came along,
right.
we started shifting, and our allegiance went very strongly to the Democrat Party.
Okay.
And that allegiance to that party is so strong that anything that speaks against the Democrat Party is not well received. In
right.
fact, they push back very aggressively against that.
Right.
And it to be a pro, let me just say this, and this is me speaking, I'm not speaking for you. I find it very hard for any person who is a Christian. I find it almost impossible to understand how you could be a Democrat as well.
Mm-hmm.
When you see what the Democrat Party is totally committed to, abortion on demand without apology.
Right.
That's what they want.
Right.
And it's the party of homosexuality, you know, this part of the party that's destroying marriage.
Right.
And so how can any conscientious Christian support the Democrat Party
right.
when you see that those things are so intricately wrapped up
yeah.
in their platform, what they believe, what they advocate for.
Right. And I think, too, you know, what other people will say to you, sort of to challenge you, would to say, well, you know, the Democratic Party is the party who really cares about the poor and is more concerned about providing a safety net for the poor, especially for the black community. And so they see those things as sort of outweighing, you know, so they may have some discomfort about, you know, a marriage or about abortion or about some of the other issues. But they say, well, this is outweighed by the fact that the Democratic Party has these wonderful safety net and social programs. Although, you know, you talk to others in the black community who will say, no, some of those programs have created such a culture of dependency
absolutely.
That it's hurt our community. So,
right.
well, one of the issues you mentioned, Pastor, was marriage. So you and I were talking about, statistics. Pastor LaFleur, you cannot stump him with any statistic. He knows them all about the out-of-wedlock birth rate in
absolutely.
The black community.
Mm-hmm.
And currently, 73% of all African-American children born in the United States are born out of wedlock, so without a stable marriage in which to raise that child. And, Pastor, you were telling me that this has been a pretty dramatic shift over the last couple decades. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that, expand on that statistic?
Absolutely. 50 years ago, 70% of black children were being raised
wow.
in a two-parent household with a mom and a dad.
Okay.
50 years later, as you mentioned, 73%, and in some areas even higher than that.
Right.
You know, almost 80% are being raised in a single-parent household.
Right.
And most of the time, that's with a single mom raising children.
Right.
And so that is a dramatic, huge turn.
Yeah, it's completely flipped.
Absolutely.
The statistics completely flipped.
And if you
flipped.
Think about it, I think in 1964, when Senior Dan and Patrick Monahan wrote the Monahan Report.
Right. Tell us a little bit about that for people who aren't familiar with the Monahan Report.
Absolutely. He noticed the trend of illegitimacy rising in the black community. And I think
right.
at that point, he was very upset because 23% of black children were being raised in single-parent households.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, this is going to be horrible. This is going to have a devastating impact on the black community because you're doing away with the structure.
Right.
You know, where you're supposed to raise up healthy and productive citizens.
Right.
It's where children are learned and where they're nurtured and how they learn to become productive citizens, how to take care of themselves, where you instill values and ethics and morals into the children.
Right.
And if that goes away, what's going to be the outcome of that?
Right.
Well, we can look forward and see here in 2017 what the result of that is.
Yeah.
I believe that the destruction of the black family is the leading cause of the violence, of all of the things that are going wrong in our communities, drugs, anything else that you can see as being a social ill nowadays,
right.
You can tie that back to the destruction of the black family.
Right, and the lack of a father in the household.
Absolutely.
We were discussing a little bit off air, listeners, a book called Fatherless America that was written by a sociologist named David Blankenhorn, who was, you know, widely excoriated in some circles for writing this book, but he talks about the fact that even if there are difficulties in a marriage, and there's a lot of tension and arguments, but, you know, anybody out there who's married knows that you have sometimes some times in your marriage that have a little more conflict involved than others. But what he talks about is when there is, even in those situations, the very presence of a male in the household, when a young man hits a certain age, will help to curb male aggression.
Absolutely.
And also for young women. So young women who are being raised without a male in the household will begin to menstruate earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which will, of course, make it easier for them to become, you know, prey to older men who are looking, you know, for younger women to engage in sex with them. So you've seen a rise in the, not only the out of wedlock birth rate, but also the teenage pregnancy rate.
Absolutely.
In that community, and the young male violence rate, which, you know, anyone who's living here in Chicago knows all too well. But these really can be, the sociologist claimed, all be tied back to the dropping marriage rate.
Absolutely.
And the Hispanic community is sadly pretty quickly following the black
catch
community.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember I was telling you, Pastor, being at a conference one time on poverty and raising that, saying, well, gosh, has there been any effort in the black community to maybe encourage marriage more, to incentivize marriage through, you know, welfare programs rather than decentivize it, which is certainly how the system is set up now. And I tell you, there was an African-American woman in the room who let me know, but quick and very strongly, that I was bigoted and racist and judgmental for even bringing up that topic. And so I didn't say anything more, or I think things would have deteriorated pretty quickly. But can you speak to that? Why would she have reacted? It was a very educated woman who herself was married and was raising her children in a marriage, but really felt I was judging people in the black community because of the low marriage rate. Can you speak to that? Help me to understand why there would have been that kind of visceral reaction.
Absolutely. And be encouraged. It wasn't just because it was you.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
Woman,
thank you.
Because I get the same reaction or anybody else that would speak to that. Because we've built up such a resistance to hearing truth when it comes down to this, that anyone who speaks to that, you know, because if you notice in the culture today, we make heroes out of single moms.
Right.
You know, and especially in the black community. Because there's so many of them, in order to assuage ourselves from the guilt of that, we paint that as that's something heroic.
Right. And, you know, in some ways, it really is.
Well,
if they've chosen life for their child, I mean, you look at Dr. Ben Carson's mother.
Absolutely. But here in this regard, I can understand, you know, that, of course, people die, so you have people that are widowed.
Right.
And unfortunately, you have people that are divorced. And so there are other ways that a woman can become a single mom. But when we look at the statistics that we were just talking about, that 70% of our children are born into single-parent households, well, that's not anything to be celebrated. And so now they've made heroes out of them, that any criticism of them is seeming to be unwelcome. And
right.
If you have to break, but they have some
And a personal judgment of them, which, of course, it is not, you know, because I'm a lawyer, I was just kind of trying to think logically and analyze the situation. I wasn't making a personal judgment on any woman who finds themselves in that situation. But it's like, what was upsetting for me is that you couldn't even talk about it.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad we're here talking about it today. Please stay tuned. And after the break, I'll come up with Pastor Cesar LaFleur, and we will continue our conversation on abortion in the black community and violence in Chicago. This is Mary Fiorito filling in for Father Anthony today on WNDZ.
You've looked for the right school for your child. But what school? You've worked hard to instill right reason and the values that God has established. And yet, you might be concerned not only with school's quality of education, but by what they may be teaching, maybe undermining what you have worked so hard to instill. Perhaps St. Stanislaus Kostka School could be the positive answer to your questions. Academic excellence and Christ-centered values are the hallmarks of St. Stanislaus Kostka School. To find out what may be the best opportunity for your child, visit ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org. See the videos, see the students, and see what may be the best decision you can make for your child. Contact the school online or pick up the phone and call St. Stanislaus Kostka School to arrange for a visit at 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Ladies, would you like to know what it is that men really want? I am Father Thomas Lawyer with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. In complement to woman's body, the body of a man is designed to act upon the environment, to go up against things greater than he is. Men are designed to defend, protect, tear down, build, resist, invent, in short, to accomplish the task. Their greatest desire, therefore, is to be told that they have what it takes. They measure up and have indeed accomplished the task. Conversely, a man's greatest fear is to be told that he is not adequate, that he is a failure. A man wants to see reflected in the eyes of his woman the essential message of his manhood. Yes, I do believe in you, honey. You are my knight in shining armor. Ladies, when a man hears that message, he will do anything for you. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in for Father Anthony today on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And we have been having an absolutely fascinating and spirited discussion today with Pastor Cesar LaFleur of the Spirit of Liberty Church in Markham, Illinois. Pastor LaFleur is well known in the pro-life movement as an activist, but is also considered an expert on marriage and the family and the effect of the lack of those things in the Black community and the violence rates and how these things all tie in together. So, Pastor LaFleur, in our last segment, I was telling you a little bit about how I raised the issue of the falling marriage rates in the Black population as being perhaps problematic or perhaps contributing to some of the other social ills that we see. And I was set upon by a very angry woman who didn't agree with me. And you were starting to explain to us a little bit about why that is. Can you expound on that just a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. A friend of mine, Pastor Louis Reyes, has written a book called The Spirit of Elisha, you know, where the prayer is that God would turn the hearts of the fathers back to the children, because mm-hmm. it's so vitally important that the fathers be there, be present in the lives of the children in order to be able to help protect them, to provide for them, to nurture them, to become their priest, to help children understand how they need to grow up. Now, you mentioned the effect of absent fathers on the community. I don't want to compare young Black men with elephants, but we were talking about what they noticed in the experiment when they removed from a certain part of Africa all of the adult males. Mm-hmm. They removed them out of the area right. and relocated them. And the absence of those adult male elephants caused the young males to go into what they call musk. They started noticing that there was destruction of property. There were other animals that were just being killed for no reason. These young bull elephants were running around, you know, committing yeah. rampant violence.
Right.
And one of the things they did to address it was they realized, listen, we have taken the adult males out, right. and these young men have just gone crazy. So they relocated adult, but
yeah, they reintroduced them into the herds.
And
then, yeah,
and it
stemmed the violence.
Absolutely, stemmed
yeah.
the violence.
Yeah.
Well, I think a very contributory to this violence in the Black community is the absence of fathers. Not only does it contribute to the violence, but to the poverty and other things that are affecting our community. I contend that most of the social ills in the Black community could be traced back to the destruction of the family
right.
and the fact that fathers are now absent. What has happened is that now young black girls without educations, without any marketable skills, when they're very young, they have children by men who are not going to stay there and raise those children.
Right.
So that forces that young woman to now partner with the government and the streets in order to be able to raise her children. And so the government becomes the father by providing all of the the things that the child needs to grow. But the streets actually become the educator.
Right.
And so they pick up the culture that they're growing up in, living on the streets, where there's violence and there's crime and all of these things. And then we wonder why,
right,
as they come into age, that now we start seeing them exhibiting those things,
right,
violence and crime. And then there's not a significant retribution to these things when they happen. We have young men that commit these horrible crimes, go into prison, stay for a little bit where they just become more hardened criminals.
Right.
And then they come back into the community and they prey on the community even more.
Right.
Because there's not an adequate sentence,
yeah,
against that inappropriate behavior.
Well, and they come out with their consciences so deadened that,
absolutely,
that they, the right and wrong and thinking through things and thinking that this other person, you know, might have an actual right to live and you not shoot them and have a right to their own personal property.
Absolutely. It's
you know, someone was trying to explain this to me, you know, I was commenting, I was driving through a certain neighborhood and nobody crossed at the crosswalks. I mean, you know, moms were like rolling their kids, and I mean, little kids out,
absolutely,
in the middle of,
yeah,
a really, really busy street in Chicago. And I thought, what? So I was just kind of expressing frustration,
absolutely,
because I did come very close to hitting somebody who just walked out. And I said, you know, this is a person who had spent a lot of time working in communities like that about the poor. I'm like, what, is it me or does nobody cross at the crosswalks? And she said, oh, you don't understand. You know, the fact that you would go to the crosswalk and walk, that shows a certain amount of order and discipline in your life. She said, there's no order.
That's missing there.
Yeah.
There's no one there to teach them those,
right,
things.
Right. And so the fact that they thought that they would walk all the way to the corner where they, mm-hmm, could just walk out in the middle of the street and save themselves 2 minutes.
Absolutely.
It's like, she said, you don't even understand. It doesn't, you know, they simply don't regularly experience a culture where you kind of follow the rules for the sake of following,
absolutely,
the rules. So,
if I can just share my own,
please do.
Experience,
oh, I would love to hear this.
Because I was one of 8 children,
mm,
that my mom and dad raised on the South Side of Chicago.
Okay.
My father, Caesar. I'm named after my,
right,
dad, Caesar, and my mom, Frankie. They raised 5 boys and 3 girls on the South Side of Chicago.
Yeah.
Now, I had a very present dad.
Okay.
Because not only was he there as the provider,
right,
and the protector,
right,
but he was also the punisher,
oh,
of,
right,
of bad behavior.
The 3 P's, provider,
right,
protector,
our
and punisher.
My father was a very strong, a loving father,
yes,
but a very strong authoritative figure.
And what did he do? What was his work?
He was a truck driver.
Oh, good
and
for
so,
him.
And actually,
okay,
and the whole family went into trucking. I was a truck driver for a while.
Were you? Okay.
Because when I was 15 years old, Dad taught me how to drive a truck.
Uh-huh.
He wouldn't let me borrow his car.
Oh, but he let you drive the truck. Okay, very good.
He gave all of his sons the skill that he had in order to be able to have a
excellent
living.
So that you would have a skill,
absolutely,
right.
But the thing, because he was present in our life, I look at that and I said, that's the reason why my family, 5 boys and 3 girls, none of my sisters had a baby before they had a husband,
right,
because that was contributed to my father's influence, my mother and father,
yeah,
and
your father
teaching
was in the house,
absolutely,
yeah.
And none of my brothers ever got involved in anything that caused the police to have to come and arrest us and lock us up.
Okay.
All of us have grown to be productive citizens, to have families of our own. 3 of us are in the ministry. 2 of us own their businesses. My sisters are housewives, and you know, and this positive,
right,
contributes to society because of the influence of our mom and dad.
Right.
And all of us are raising our children the same way.
Okay. And I you know, from just what you've described to me, it doesn't sound like you grew up with incredible wealth or privilege. Or,
oh, absolutely not.
No, yeah, okay.
8 kids. You
right.
Know,
yes. No, I'm just, yeah, I just want people to understand, you know, because sometimes people say, well, that's great. They had a lot of money. He was a well-to-do, whatever. He was a, you know, black doctor or a black lawyer. It was that you were very much, you know, middle-class family.
Absolutely. I saw my dad, you know, living from paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, you can imagine, you know, trying to raise a family,
right,
you know, on one income. And so my dad, but he didn't give up. He showed us,
right,
that you have to get up and go to work every day.
Right.
And so actually got to a period with my brothers, and we laugh about that all the time, that when we got to be a certain age, we couldn't sleep in on Saturdays anymore.
Wow.
Because Dad made us get up and go to work.
Wow.
And so there,
okay,
was a certain way we need to carry ourselves. But I'm speaking about the positive influence of having a father.
Sure.
He taught us how to respect women. You know, he demanded that we do. We had to respect,
yeah,
our sisters. We had to respect our mom.
Yeah.
And so it instilled in us a sense of respect,
right,
that I pass on to now to young men. Listen, it's a shame the way we victimize these young women.
Right.
When you go out and you just sleep with a woman and impregnate her and then leave her and abandoning her,
yeah,
you're abdicating your responsibility as a black man,
mm-hmm,
to be protective of the black woman.
Right.
And so now that we see this victimization within the black community of black men victimizing black women.
Right. Oh, and you, mm-hmm, know, and when I listen to some of the music lyrics, you know, from some of the music that's so prevalent,
oh
and not
God.
Just in the black
yeah.
community, but it's certainly, it seems yeah. that many young people are, I mean, they're so degrading and violent and mm-hmm. vulgar. And you just think, you know, I remember when, you know, rap music first started was when I was in high school, you know, and what was the very first song, the very first kind of big rap group?
And Sugar Hill Gang.
Yeah, Sugar Hill Gang. Yeah. And do you remember like how, oh, yeah. my kids laugh at those lyrics. I'm
right.
like, oh, Mom, that's so cheesy. But it was fun and it was poetic mm. and it had a message, but none of it with this violence or vulgarity.
Absolutely not.
And particularly the things said about women.
Absolutely.
Are just
you
horrifying.
I can't remember who actually said it, but I heard a quote that says, if you allow me to write your songs, it won't matter who writes your laws. Saying that whatever we, you know,
oh,
that we embrace in the pop culture
mm-hmm.
is going to influence the way we think, the way we see things. It's going to change our perspective.
Right.
And so now when you hear all of these songs that call women horrible names,
yeah.
refer to them as that,
right.
the sad thing is when you hear the women referring to themselves that
mm-hmm.
way and
yeah.
allowing themselves. And when you talk about the only thing is, you know, get money and get women, then that,
right.
it influences our opinion
right.
and it changes our values and our morals, and we start seeing that acting out.
Right.
How do we make heroes out of, what was the name of the group, Two Live Crew
right.
or NWA,
right.
you know, those, you know, F the Police and things like that.
Yeah.
When we have these things that promote violence,
yeah.
you know, that glamorizes violence,
right.
you know, that has men around singing, tagging, and repeating the things that they hear in the songs because it's been glamorized so much that becomes now the things they aspire to.
Yeah, oh, they've embraced it, you know. It's
absolutely.
Been completely embraced. And
it becomes what we aspire to. So now
yeah.
you got them that actually nowadays that want to be successful drug dealers or
mm-hmm.
some of these things. Instead of what happened to the day when we wanted to be doctors?
Right.
And, you know, we wanted to be lawyers, be teachers.
And that's I was so sorry to see Dr. Ben Carson marginalized in so many ways during the last presidential election because he really does have an incredibly inspirational personal story. You know, his mother was a single mother. She couldn't read herself,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't know that. But so she would make them write one book report a week during the summer and then pretend to read them.
Right.
And she had absolutely no idea what they said.
Yeah.
But she said, you know, my mother made us learn. And
absolutely.
And again, you know, and I'm and it was not her fault. Her husband abandoned her. And
absolutely,
so
right.
she had been married and then he took off on her and went
mm-hmm.
off with some other woman. So, again, that's one of the heroic aspects. You do want to absolutely encourage people to support a woman like that who's in a situation.
Absolutely.
But, you know, sadly, what we're finding with many of the women in that statistic, it's that the out-of-wedlock births are being done intentionally.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then they often lead to abortions, but, you know, as we know, the repeat abortion rate in the United States is now more than 50%. So
wow.
more than 50% of all the abortions in our country are second, third, fourth, because the first abortion isn't going to solve any of the problems.
Absolutely. Everything
that,
still exists.
That led
right?
you, exactly. They're
yeah.
all still there. You just
right.
have the abortion with all the problems, you know,
mm-hmm.
On top of them. I was just thinking, I'm on the board of a pregnancy center here in Chicago, and whatever, I can tell this story because the woman's told it publicly at many of our events, but a lovely young African-American woman came to us. She was 18. The baby's father was a man who was already in a common law marriage with another woman and had five kids, but he impregnated this young girl. And she stumbled upon our center. She thought we were an abortion clinic, kind of misunderstood and came in. And so we, after meeting with her, she decided she wanted to have the child, but we thought it best, given the kind of complications with the baby's father, to move her to one of our maternity homes, which is in a place in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. She had her baby. Then we were able to get her. There's a special scholarship program for African-American young women who are single moms way up in Minnesota. And it was very funny, Pastor, because she had said she was from the Englewood neighborhood in Chicago. And I don't think any white people, but I think it's 100% African-American. I don't even think there's statistically. And she had said to us, she was a little nervous about living in the suburbs because she'd never really talked to white people before. She said, literally on one hand, and then we were sending her to northern Minnesota. So you can imagine the culture shock. But you know what? This year she's graduating with a nursing degree.
Praise God.
And her son's four.
Yes.
And isn't that better?
Amen.
Isn't that better? She's going to come out. She's, you know, she has ended the relationship with this man. And she's going to come out with a way to support herself. She's got a beautiful little boy. And she's got a college degree and she's got a way to support herself. Isn't that the better way to go?
Oh, absolutely.
Than,
yeah.
So, you know, so there's one woman. But tell me, when you're speaking to the young men in your congregation and the young women and people in your community, What if you had Mayor Rahm Emanuel's ear for 5 minutes and he said, Caesar, I want you to tell me, what should I do? What would you do?
Well, I was intrigued when you posed the question in your email that way. And I started praying about that. And unfortunately, the thing that came to me is that even if I had his ear, I don't know if he would actually listen.
Right.
You know, one of
but
the
if
things,
he did, say yeah, he said, you know, right. I, you know, Pastor, I've heard a lot of good things about you. Mm-hmm. I've listened to all these other pastors in the community. I want to hear what you have to say.
And so I think the thing is, I'm sure he indulged me in and listened to what I'm saying.
Right.
But I'm thinking, is he actually going to hear it? You know, when Jesus
right.
was teaching
I understand what you mean, Pastor.
On
sure.
the kingdom, he would say, let he who has an ear hear what the Spirit is saying to the churches.
Right.
Which means that there's a possibility that if your heart is sensitive and you awaken to that, you can hear it. But also means that there's the ability to be able to listen and not hear because you just can't receive it.
Yeah, I see
and
what you
I
mean.
Think that's the reason why as we bring these solutions forward, why it's so hard for people to be able to accept them. The Bible says our people are destroyed because of a lack of knowledge. But because you have rejected knowledge, God says then you can no longer be priest to me. Because the thing I would tell him is that it's not going to be a human solution exclusively to this.
Oh.
So it needs to be a very comprehensive approach. It has to be a comprehensive approach of return to righteousness and return to responsibility.
Right.
But when we talk about the righteousness principles, when it comes down to these things, you need to hear that this is spiritual. And you're not going to be able to fix a spiritual problem with a human solution.
Right.
And so we're going to have to be willing to listen and be able to go, listen, the reason why we've gotten into that situation is because we've turned our backs and turned our hearts away from God. Because God has laid out for us the answers that we're looking for are already there.
Right.
But it's, will people listen and hear that?
Right.
As we've been talking about this whole time, the family. We need to have a commitment to the family. So what's going to awaken people's hearts to that?
Right.
Mary, listen, I'm convinced that not only with the pro-life movement, but every other social righteousness issue, that there's going to have to be a reformation. Well, this is going to have to be a solution born out of spiritual awakening and a revival in America. Because what we're doing now, we're looking for the smart people to come along and be able to make a difference.
Right. So to come up with a program.
Right.
To come
if
up
we
with
can
it,
elect
right.
this person, he's going to fix it. Or if we can get this person in the power, he's going to fix it. But it's not going to be a human solution to a spiritual issue.
Right.
The Bible says, unless the Lord builds the house, unless the Lord keeps the city, the worker works in vain, the watchman is awake in vain. It's going to have to be a return to our commitment to awakening, spiritual awakening, and revival.
Right.
It's interesting. Malcolm X said it's ridiculous to try to rally people around an idea to which they have not been awakened.
Okay.
And so we need a spiritual awakening, and then we need a return to responsibility.
Okay.
People need to take responsibility for themselves and their actions.
Right.
So spiritual awakening and a return to responsibility.
Okay. And then when we come back from our break, listeners, we will continue our conversation with Pastor Caesar LaFleur. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony today on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the Donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just two blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org, and enter into the presence of Christ.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I am sitting in for Father Anthony today on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I have been joined this hour by Pastor Cesar LaFleur, who is the executive pastor of the Spirit of Liberty Church in Markham, Illinois. But beyond that, a nationally known expert on issues of marriage and family, and in a particular way, abortion in the African-American community. And Pastor, you were telling me you're going to speak at a pretty important conference in Washington, D.C. later on this week. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I'm going to be joined by Dr. Ben Carson and Sister Alveda King, who's the niece of Martin Luther King, Dr. Eric Wallace, and others at the Leadership Summit for the Black Conservative Summit. And it's entitled Black Families Matter.
Oh, wow.
And so basically, we're going to be advancing some of the things that we're talking about here today about how important the black family is and how we're going to be able to point out that the destruction of the black family is the leading cause of all of the social ills that we're experiencing right now, poverty, mm-hmm. abortion, crime, and all those things. And I'm particularly going to be talking on the subject of, we read a story by a lady by the name of Joy Jones, who said that in the minds and hearts of young people nowadays, marriage is for white people.
Right.
And because there's a rejection of marriage in the black community, mm-hmm. now we see the reason why we have this elevation of all these social ills.
Right.
Actually, as I mentioned to you earlier, it is more probable that a black child would have grown up in a two-parent household during slavery than even today.
Wow.
How black women are the least married women in society today.
Right.
And because we have this destruction of the family, we really need to point out that if black lives matter, and they do,
mm-hmm.
but all black lives matter,
right.
and black families are vitally important
right.
in order to be able to add value and things like that to the black lives.
And right.
when we don't have that in place, society really suffers because of that.
Yeah, I was reading a report by, of all things, an economist who was doing an analysis of marriage rates and applying economic principles to, you know, the problem of marriage rates dropping. So, unfortunately, as sex becomes, as a commodity, becomes available to men without having
Absolutely.
A cost associated mm-hmm. with it, right, marriage, then the marriage rates will drop because, you know, the men realize they don't have to have the investment in the woman or her children or a life with her in order to get the thing that he wants.
Absolutely.
And but unfortunately, it also hurts the woman because then the pool of men who are interested in marriage and available for marriage has shrunk to the point that mm-hmm. for African-American women, it's next to impossible is far too strong, but very much more difficult than it would be for a white woman to find a marriage partner than it would be for a black woman to find a marriage
Absolutely.
Partner. Yeah.
And also it points out the fact that in during the younger years, black men are rejecting marriage for the reasons that you said.
Right.
You know, they don't have to get married and invest in a woman in order to be able to have sex. So they want their freedom.
Right.
Then by the time they come around and they want to get married,
yeah.
you know, black women now who have invested their times in their careers, they're more employable. And
right.
They're figuring out, I don't need a man now in order to be able to provide for me a house, a home,
right.
things like that. And many of the black men, by the time they're ready, they have all of this baggage and everything that comes along with it. So there's a rejection on both ends when it comes
yeah.
down to marriage,
yeah.
not realizing how detrimental that is going to be to our society,
yeah.
especially when it comes down to the poverty rates.
Right.
Because if I can,
please,
as I mentioned, you talk about people being insulted. I believe the sociologist's name is James Quick. And he had a piece where he said these are the 39 most important words for young African-Americans. He says, finish high school, don't have a child until you're past 20, and don't produce that child until you're married.
Mm-hmm.
79% of those who follow that pattern
those three things, right.
live above the poverty level.
Right.
And you know those who don't, inevitably wind up in poverty.
Right.
So I was thinking, I shared that with someone, with a black woman
mm-hmm.
who was very close to me.
Yeah.
And she became angry,
right.
livid. And I'm going, whoa, what are you mad about? Because she said, how dare this white guy
yeah.
have this kind of commentary
uh-huh.
about, you know, black women and black community.
Right.
So I said, are you more insulted that he said that or the fact that this is the reality
right.
when we have all of these young black girls, not even finishing high school.
Yeah.
They're not 20 years old.
Right.
They have no husband. Having multiple children,
right.
where else do you think they're going to wind up except in poverty?
Correct.
And what do you think is going to happen to those children?
Right.
You know, where are they going to be nurtured and sheltered and provided for?
Right.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, I did you happen to see the movie Hidden Figures?
I have not yet.
Oh, you must see it, because it's a story of the three African-American women who were the three top scientists
with
at NASA.
NASA. Yeah.
And what's beautiful about that movie is not only does it portray black women in a very dignified way, but also marriage in the black community is, so there's one woman who was widowed and she's, you know, raising her two daughters with the help of her mother and then is courted, you know, in a very, you know, oh my goodness, just wonderful way by this man in her church who, you know, properly proposes to her in front of her mother and her children, and then they marry. And it's the example that set. And every single one of those women, of course, grew up in intact households. Mm. Right. And the reason they were able to go on to college and become the scientific, you know, brilliant minds that they were largely in part that they had, you know, mothers and fathers at home who made sure they graduated from high school and saw the talent that they had and channeled that talent appropriately.
Absolutely.
But yeah. That movie I just found so inspiring. I took my daughters to see it because it was the weekend of that ridiculous Women's March in Washington, because I wanted them to see, you know, here are real women's role models that see themselves as dignified people and have self-respect.
Absolutely.
So it was, but mm-hmm. so tell me, like, so for example, as you're pastoring your community, how do you bring up this issue of marriage? And then how is that, how do people react? How do people in your congregation, can they hear the message? And as we talked about, are they listening or do they hear the message?
Well, one of the ways our primary way is our preaching. Mm-hmm. And so we preach about values and we preach about these things and we try to model them. And we promote them. We have conferences and teachings and talks in order to be able to advance these things. Now, unfortunately, the way the situation is, we have so many in our church that are single mm-hmm. because of all of the things that we say to that.
Yeah, just statistically, it would be unlikely
absolutely.
That you wouldn't have a lot of people in that situation.
And sometimes it's very tough to get beyond the hurt or the shame or the defensive that have been put up.
Right.
And you have to be very, very careful. Even as we talk about abortion and all those other things, there needs to be a sensitivity to the fact that there are some people that's hurting because
of
that.
Of course.
And so we have to ask God to give us, you know, the right kind of sensitivity in order to be able to speak about it. But speak about it very clearly, we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about those things. We write about it. We try to produce things that we can have out in the public forum for people to be able to see and access and read. And so we basically champion it within the message of what we preach, because I think this is the gospel. This is, we're preaching faith. We're preaching these things are important. They were important to Jesus, you know, so those things should be important to us as well.
Well, so, you know, I think maybe you're working with people who might be more predisposed to being guided by you, you know, mm-hmm. because they're there in church. But then you have such a huge part of the community, and this would be the same in the white community, people who just don't go to church at all. They're just completely mm-hmm. unchurched. And as we're, you know, again, we're beginning summer now here in Chicago. What do you think, you know, in addition to obviously we have to have prayer, we have to have a return to righteousness, but do you see any other kind of smaller, do these midnight basketball leagues work?
No.
Okay,
no.
Yeah. So yeah. What would you do if you could, like, kind of do one thing this summer? What would you think could help stem some of this violence?
Well, you know, and although I would want to be hopeful, but I don't think there's anything you're going to be able to do this summer that's going to stem the violence.
Okay.
So one of the things I've said, it has to be a commitment, a recommitment to the fact that, first of all, there needs to be consequences associated with the things that are happening in our community.
Right.
You know, the Bible says when sentence against an evil work isn't executed speedily, mm-hmm. the hearts of men are licensed to do that which is evil. Mm-hmm. So that means if we can allow people to continue to do these things and get away with it,
then
they're going to be more inclined to do it because there's no consequence associated with
it. And they've learned that.
They've learned to live without consequences.
Right,
because think about it. You murder somebody, you go to jail for 4 years, and you get out, and you murder someone else.
Right, and then you're back in jail again, and it starts all over. Well, Pastor LaFleur, I cannot thank you enough. You were well worth the wait, Pastor, to have you on this show.
Thank you so much.
I hope you'll come back again. This has been Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony today on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. What's there to say when right from wrong has become so obscure? It does not take that long, can you see?